So according to ASIO, what kinds of threats is Australia currently exposed to?
Well, we're still exposed to an array of terrorist threats because these days we don't talk about the risk of terrorism as much as we did, say, 5, let alone 10 or 15 years ago. But the threat hasn't really gone away. And it's represented by a number of key factors and a number, and it's driven by a number of key ideologies. 9/11 exposed to us to the threat of the so-called Islamic terrorism and follow-on events such as Bali 1, Bali 2 bombings, attacks in other parts of Indonesia and in other parts of the world. Made us preoccupied with the threat of the so-called Islamic terrorism. And why I'm saying so-called Islamic terrorism, we should be very clear in distinguishing violent militant ideology that terrorists endorse and promote against any form of religion on which they allegedly base this ideology. So it's not exactly the same. But the threat of the so-called,
did you say something, Alexa?
But the threat of the so-called Islamic terrorism gave additional stimulus to the rise of counter extremist ideologies, and that's where the risk of a violent attack carried out by either right-wing group or a neo-Nazi group or a white supremacist group has risen. So what ASIO confirmed this year is something that's been in the works and they've been focusing on for probably over a decade, whilst media continue to effectively massage this whole issue of the so-called Islamic terrorism.
Well, that's an interesting point that you raised there, because obviously it has been a topic of conversation of late, the rise of right-wing terrorism. You feel this is, in some ways, a reactionary movement?
Well, in some ways, it is a reactionary movement, because obviously any types of extremists try to see opportunities to not just promote their cause, but also expand on their catchment base. I mean, it's all about promotion. It's all about propaganda. It's all about winning popular support. We should also remember that right-wing terrorism, neo-Nazism, white supremacy extremism was present in Australia throughout the 1990s. And in fact, before 9/11, there were instances when this threat was given more prominence than other forms of terrorism that form part of this asymmetric security threat spectrum. But quite often, and largely due to popular perception, we tend to sort of neglect those acts of terrorism or those terrorist activities, either describing them as criminal offenses. For example, in late 1990s, while I'm speaking for Western Australia, as a case study, there were a number of firebombings of restaurants owned by Asian Australians, or there were regular displays of graffiti messages which propagated Nazi symbols such as swastika, and then there would be display of hatred messages towards either Asian Australians or other Australians of non-Anglo-Saxon descent. But at that time, both media as well as state governments played it down to be acts of hooliganism or acts of low-level criminal activities rather than acts of extremism and terrorism. And unfortunately, even after 9/11, whenever there was a case of a terrorist activity or terrorist-related activity performed by non-Islamic groups, it tended to be played down because it didn't fit sort of the established cliche of what terrorism is all about. I mean, we should still remember this this case of a driver who used his vehicle as effectively a killing machine and went on a killing spree in Melbourne, whilst claiming to be driven by God and doing it in the name of Christ. To me, that was a clear case of terrorism. But because he was of a Christian descent, at that time it was, I mean, that act of terrorism, and this is how I would describe it, was still being viewed as a mass killing, right, as a murder. So I think there is still a problem with shifting away from that paradigm we found ourselves in after 9/11 and Bali bombings, assuming that if any form of terrorism would take place in Australia, it must be Islamic terrorism. Anything else should be viewed and classified as something else.
I think it's an excellent point that you make. Really couldn't agree more with that. Bringing that to the sort of idea of, well, as I mentioned before, ASIO is saying they are investigating double the amount of leads into terrorist individuals, terrorist groups since last year. Is that reflective of something we should be concerned about, an increase in terrorists and possible terrorist events? Or is it a reflective of a shift in that paradigm?
Well, I don't think it's reflective in the shift on the paradigm. I mean, the threat of terrorism hasn't really gone away. We sort of got accustomed to realizing that the threat of terrorism is somewhere there. We haven't really seen any real terrorist activity in Australia, and it's not because nothing is happening, but simply because our law enforcement intelligence and counterterrorism capability has become so effective that many of plots have been curtailed or preempted from happening. I mean, we had sporadic terror-related incidents, but not in the same magnitude as what was happening in Europe, for example, in recent years, or in other parts of the world. But the threat hasn't gone away. In fact, I would expect there's going to be even more attempts to capitalize on the current situation, for example, with coronavirus, by the same groups that would try to inject the messages of hatred towards the Chinese, towards Asians, you know, the origin, the geographical origin of the problem, in an attempt to further their cause, in an attempt to recruit more people who are now getting frustrated with fear of this unknown disease, with growing shortages of basic supplies because of this panic buys that are happening across Australia. So as long as there are conditions or preconditions that exist in the world, either because of geopolitical trends or because, for example, of increased health risks, that can be massaged and converted into a powerful propaganda tool to effectively sell the message to those who are angry or upset or confused or scared by simply saying, "You want a quick fix solution? We can actually tell you whom to blame for." And that sort of presents an ideal ground for these activities, not necessarily violent activities in the first instance, to take place, but those sort of activities still need to be taken seriously and recognized, because sooner or later they would result in an attempt to resort to politically motivated violence. So that's one element. The second element takes us back to this fact of the so-called Islamic terrorism. With the defeat of ISIS or ISIL in the Middle East, we now see a similar effect that occurred after the Soviets withdrew from Afghanistan back in 1989. Foreign fighters that traveled to the Middle East, to Syria, to Iraq, to fight alongside ISIL, will now be returning back to their home countries or to places closer to their homes in order to continue their struggle elsewhere in the name of the same organization. And we know that hundreds, if not thousands, of ISIS supporters traveled from our part of the world, including from Australia. We hear those cases regularly of nationals trying to return back home or their relatives trying to return back home. And that situation also increases the risk of now a new form of Islamic terrorism inspired not by Al-Qaeda or Jamaat Islamiyah, rather than by ISIS, when those militants who gain experience, who master their horror techniques fighting for ISIS in across the Middle East, will now be settling either in our neighborhood or trying to return back or penetrate Australia. So that risk remains. And finally, because that would not be just the complete picture of terror risk, there are also other groups, movements, and interests more specialized in what I would describe as agenda-driven extremist activities that may pose a certain degree of security risk, because their ideologies can also sort of shift away from being fairly radical into extremist. And this is where we need to think and take seriously of organizations or groups who may want to follow honorable causes such as, for example, in protecting environmentalism or protecting animal rights. But at some point in time, and history has actually shown cases like that existed, these organizations can actually cross the line from operating in the lawful realm and trying to resort to extremist tactics in order to promote their cause, thinking that they still justify it simply because they're trying to do something good for either the environment or protecting animal rights or something like that. And so that also adds to the complexity of the spectrum and the confusion about what is right, what is wrong, what is permissible, what is not. So coming back to the ACA report, because of this very complexity of the security risk that exists in the Australian threat spectrum, ACO has been increasingly busy and been quite blunt about a reminder that the risk of terrorism hasn't gone away. It is as diverse as before, and we need to be very mindful about it now, particularly when we once again seeing a new set of risks that pose to Australia. Well, this time are driven maybe not so much by some sort of extremist groups who want to go and engage in mass killings, but for example, hidden threats like coronavirus, which, as I said before, may also lead to this spark of yet another wave of extremist propaganda, which may then result in an attempt to resort to politically motivated violence.
We will have to leave it there, Alexei, but pleasure as always getting you on the program.
Thanks very much for having me.